I think I'll just begin. That's all right. Okay, do your two children know something about Dhruva Maharaj?
He knows a little bit.
You know a little bit? Can you tell me one thing about Dhruva Maharaj?
He did austerities.
He did austerities. Yes, he sure did.
And when he was 5 years old.
When he was 5 years old. How old are you?
Seven.
Seven. So you better, you got some catching up to do. But you do austerities too. You go to school, you live in Chicago, and you know. Growing up in America, that's austerity. Shoo. Okay. Those are the verses that we'll be discussing. Canto 4, chapter 8, and we're covering a lot of verses, text 39 all the way to 62. In the bottom left corner, that's where you see Dhruva. And the bottom right corner, that's where you see the lotus feet of Krishna, a deity of Krishna. And if you look really closely, you'll see a rupee note folded up right by his feet. Somebody offered a rupee note at his feet. And the subtopic here is achieve the Lord or receive the Lord. Because the last session was focused on Dhruva's determination. He was really, really, triple really determined to get a kingdom. And he knew the kind of kingdom he wanted was too big for himself to achieve, so he needed mercy. He needed Narada's mercy. Can we achieve Krishna just with determination? Like this little boy lifting a weight, is that possible? Not possible. We need mercy. And so Narada, having examined Dhruva's determination and found him to be unstoppable determination, so he then gave him instructions how to achieve Krishna or Vishnu. The narrator of the whole of the, most of the third and all of the fourth canto is Maitreya. Maitreya is speaking to Vidura. Maitreya said, the great personality Narada Muni, upon hearing the words of Dhruva Maharaj, became very compassionate toward him, and in order to show him his causeless mercy, he gave him the following expert advice. Now the picture shows Narada placing his hand on Dhruva's head. That's a benedicting gesture. Unfortunately, I left my glasses, reading glasses. I'll do it like this. I can read that easily. Okay, I'll do that. Won't go well with the camera, but I can read the script. Dhruva Maharaj, this is commentary by Prabhupada. Dhruva Maharaj was a child. And so his demand was that of a playful child. Narada is the foremost spiritual master, and therefore naturally his only activity is to bestow the greatest benefit upon whomever he meets. That's Narada Muni. So when he saw the determination of this little boy to get this amazing kingdom, we'll see some details of what kingdom he wanted, he showed him compassion, and compassion of a pure devotee like Narada is beyond even the imagination of Dhruva. And it takes Dhruva beyond that Kshatriya passionate spirit. So continuing, the great sage Narada Muni told Dhruva Maharaj, the instruction given by your mother Suniti to follow the path of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is just suitable for you. The image on the left is his mother, Suniti, giving him instruction, and Narada is supporting that instruction. You should therefore completely absorb yourself in the devotional service of the Lord. So before he was testing Dhruva's determination, saying, oh, it's really difficult and so many things, Dhruva was determined. So now, direct that determination to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Dhruva Maharaj wanted a realm beyond Lord Brahma's abode, which can only be fulfilled by worshipping Krishna. When Krishna offers anything, it is beyond the expectation of the devotee. So this is, his image is one universe. And we're going to see something more about this universe. At the very bottom half, that's the Garbhadak ocean. And there's Garbhadakshai Vishnu reclining on an antashesh with Lakshmi at his feet. And above Garbhadakshai Vishnu, there's the seven lower planetary systems. You see the earth planet. It says you are here. That's the earth planet in the Bhu Mandala region. And then above that is six other planetary regions. Uvarloka, Svargaloka, Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka. And at the very top, that's Brahmaloka. So he, Dhruva, wanted a kingdom beyond Brahmaloka, which means the spiritual world. That's what he wanted. So over on the left, that's Lord Shiva in Shivaloka. And over on the right, that's Durga, that's Devi Dham, that's this universe. So it's here's a more detailed picture, a little clearer. There's the lower planetary systems, the middle planetary systems, and the upper planetary systems. And in this Svargaloka region, that's the realm of the 33 million demigods, including in Bhuvarloka, the Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, and Apsaras, and those personalities. That's their realm. Here's another nice drawing. This shows the upper three above the heavenly realm is Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka. Sometimes these are called Muniloka. You see over on the left, right here, that's Indra. And so Indra is in Indraloka, and Indraloka is in the heavenly realm. So what Dhruva wanted was something beyond that. Beyond heaven, beyond Brahmaloka, beyond this universe. That's what he wanted, little boy. Here's a drawing made by Dhanavir Maharaj expressing in another image what he's wanting. The two terms that are shown here are Dakshina Vartavayu. That's the wind that moves the planetary systems. And Pravaha Vayu is these ropes that you see. There's ropes of air, Pravaha Vayu, ropes that tie the planets in the universe in the upper three planetary systems to Dhruvaloka, or the pole star. So there's ropes of air, and there's this Dakshinavarta Vayu that moves everything. All the stars, called nakshatras, are tied to Dhruvaloka with ropes of air, or pravaha. And they revolve around Bhumandala, that's this, the ring down at the bottom, the seven ring-shaped islands. And Dhruvaloka, up here on the left, it says Dhruvaloka, or the pole star, is 3,800,000 yojanas, or times eight. It's that many miles above the sun. So there's all these numerical or empiric calculations found in the fifth canto Bhagavatam. And so this is an attempt to picture, to depict it. That dolphin that you see, the blue dolphin in the middle, that's Shishumar. It's not a literal place, it's a figurative place. It's a place where the planets in the upper realm are situated. It's an upside down dolphin. Anyway, that's what that is in the picture. And it's Shishumar is mentioned in the several places in Jyotisha scriptures and in the Bhagavatam and the Puranas. Shishumar. So that's just a visual picture of this is what he wants. He wants this place that's beyond the realm of Brahma. The daily clockwise or east to west motion of the sun is due to the Dakshinavarta wind. Wind is blowing against these ropes of wind, and the planetary systems are moving along with the wheel of time, forced by wind and the force of time. Time moves the wind, and the wind moves the sun and all the other planets. That's the Vedic picture. Okay, so back to the verse. Narada Muni was very pleased with Dhruva Maharaj. And he could have at once, this is Prabhupada's purport, he could have at once personally given whatever Dhruva wanted. But that is not the duty of the spiritual master. His duty is to engage the disciple in proper devotional service as prescribed in the Shastras. So that's what's going to happen next. Narada is going to give Dhruva the bhakti process in details how to do. Any person who desires the fruits of the four principles of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and at the end liberation should engage himself in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For worship of his lotus feet yields the fulfillment of all of these. Now, Dhruva wanted something material, right? Or at least the desire was a material desire. The destination wasn't material. But his fruitive spirit was material. So Narada is saying, by the bhakti process, all of these things can be achieved, which is the same as what his mother said. Prabhupada quotes this verse from the Bhagavatam, Akama Sarvakamova Mukshakama Udharati Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. We all know this verse. Yajeta Purusham Param Tivra Bhakti. We talked about Tivra Bhakti this morning. So now we're going to hear the bhakti process as it was given by Dhruva, by Narada to Dhruva. And it's the bhakti process in a nutshell. It's not bhakti rasamrita sindhu. It's, quickie. The elements of the bhakti process. You should go to the bank of the Jamuna, where there is a virtuous forest named Madhuvan. And there be purified. So go to a sacred place. Madhuvan is one of the 12 forests in Vrindavan. My dear boy, in the waters of the Jamuna River, which is known as Kalindi, you should take 3 baths daily because the water is very auspicious, sacred, and clear. After bathing, you should perform the necessary regulative principles for Ashtanga Yoga. Remember, it's Satya Yoga, and meditation is the primary means for achieving perfection in Satya Yoga, right? Meditation. So Ashtanga Yoga is a meditation process. So he's engaging him. He's going to, he doesn't give him a yoga class, teach him the asanas and everything, but he's giving principles. And then sit down on your asana, sitting place, in a calm and quiet position. After sitting on your seat, practice the 3 kinds of breathing exercises. What's that? Pranayama, right? 3 kinds of breathing exercises. And thus gradually control the life air, the mind, and the senses. Completely free yourself from all material contamination. Boy, that was fast. And with great patience, begin to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he's going to describe the form. This is a quickie on the process of meditation. So then comes some of the details of the form. This is the posture that Dhruva eventually was engaging in his meditation, not sitting down in some other asana, but this particular one. The photograph on the right is a photograph of the stairway leading up to the hill, Dhruvatila, where in Madhuban Dhruva did his austerities. It's a nice place. So you can visit it. We'll see. We saw the temple inside in the first evening. Now, Narada is going to describe the form of the Lord to meditate upon. The Lord's face is perpetually very beautiful and pleasing in attitude. 2, the devotees who see him, he appears never to be displeased, and he is always prepared to award benedictions to them. His eyes, nicely decorated eyebrows, his raised nose, and his broad forehead are all very beautiful. He is more beautiful than all the demigods. Okay, so now comes a reflection exercise. So please participate and listen carefully. Think of an incident where you might have missed or neglected to fulfill some instruction that you were given, or you missed some of the spiritual practices that you were supposed to perform. And consider, despite having and acknowledging that shortcoming, you felt unconditional acceptance by your spiritual guide or guides or spiritual master or those who give you spiritual care, or your mother and father, and you just felt accepted by them. Even you know you did something that, or you neglected something that you shouldn't have neglected. So think about it. And when you, what you felt at the time, and reflecting back on it, how you feel now. There's a purpose to this. Let's pause a little bit. One thing is being accepted, because the theme of this is achieving the Lord or receiving the Lord. So on our own, determination is not sufficient. There has to be some acknowledgement of our shortcomings, and still we're accepted. And then it turned around the other way. How can you be unconditionally accepting of others? If you don't feel accepted, it's hard to be accepting of others. You have to receive, and once you receive and receive and you trust that you have been accepted, to be accepting of others, your heart becomes bigger, larger, and more kind. Because this is a long section, I don't know if we're going to be able to do the reflection exercises fully. We could, if we had more time, ask for some examples from scriptures where someone was unconditionally accepted by another someone. But because of time, I don't think we'll do that. Because I know this is a long section. Narada continues describing the Lord's form. The Lord's form is always youthful. Every limb and every part of his body is properly formed, free from defects. His eyes and lips are pinkish like the rising sun. He is always prepared to give shelter to the surrendered soul. And anyone so fortunate as to look upon him feels all satisfaction. The Lord is worthy to be the master of the surrendered soul, for he is the ocean of mercy. I put that in colored letters. The Lord is always worthy to be the master of the surrendered soul. And that is because by nature he's merciful. The worthy one is the merciful one, and he's all-powerful. There's unconditional mercy and capacity, power. We should take shelter. That's very inviting and enthusing for shelter-taking purpose. The Lord is further described as having the mark of Sri Vatsa, or the sitting place of the goddess of fortune, and his bodily hue is deep bluish. The Lord is a person. He wears a garland of flowers and is eternally manifest with four hands which hold a conch, wheel, club, and lotus flower. And this is a little boy. He's 5 years old, right? 5 years old. So he's hearing about the Lord, and he's going to go meditate on the Lord just by hearing from Narada. The entire body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, is decorated. He wears a valuable jeweled helmet, necklaces, and bracelets. His neck is adorned with the Kastuva jewel, and he is dressed in yellow silk garments. The Lord is decorated with small golden bells around his waist, and his lotus feet are decorated with golden ankle bells. All his bodily features are very attractive and pleasing to the eyes. He is always peaceful, calm, and quiet, and very pleasing to the eyes and to the mind. Looks like that baby calf is having a nice time at the feet of Krishna also. Then that's the form of the Lord to meditate. Then he gives them the procedure. Real yogis meditate upon the transcendental form of the Lord as he stands on the whirl of the lotus of their hearts, the jewel-like nails of his lotus feet glittering. There's a yogi meditating on that form. The Lord is always smiling. And the devotee should constantly see the Lord in this form as he looks very mercifully toward the devotee. In this way, the meditator should look toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the bestower of all benedictions. One who meditates in this way, concentrating his mind upon the always auspicious form of the Lord, is very soon freed from all material contamination, and he does not come down from meditation upon the Lord. That's the meditation process. Previous is the object or form of the Lord that is meditating upon. Entering into the lotus of the heart of the devotees by his two feet, which shine with jewel-like nails, he becomes situated in the jiva and in his intelligence. Wow. Vishwanath says, Samarchitam means of the devotees. See in the verse, Samarchitam. And below that, Dishnyam. Dishnyam means place. And Atmani means in the jiva. And in his intelligence. So he becomes situated in the jiva and in his intelligence. Now the Lord is already in our heart. So what does that being situated in mean? It means he shows himself, he reveals himself, he's already there, but not perceived by us because we're distracted. When the attention goes to him with devotion, then he reveals himself in this way, in the jiva, in their intelligence. Within the lotus of their hearts. Then, Narada is going to give the mantra. You know the mantra that he gave him? What's the rest? Om Namo Bhagavate. Oh, son of the king, now I shall speak unto you the mantra, which is to be chanted with this process of meditation. One who carefully chants this mantra for 7 nights can see the perfect human beings, the associates of the Lord, traveling in the sky. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is the 12-syllable mantra for worshiping Lord Krishna. One should install the physical forms of, so now it's the object of meditation, the procedure of meditation, the mantra for meditation, and now he's going to describe deity worship, the deity form of the Lord. One should install the physical forms of the Lord. This is in Satya Yuga, by the way. It's a meditation day. It's primary, but there's all these other assisting elements. One should install the physical forms of the Lord, and with the chanting of the mantra, one should offer flowers and fruits and other varieties of foodstuffs exactly according to the rules and regulations prescribed by authorities. Now, just a 5-year-old boy doesn't know all the rules and regulations. He didn't give him a deity worship class. He must know something. He must have said something more than just follow the rules. But this should be done in consideration of place, time, and attendant conveniences and inconveniences. Meaning when you're in the forest, you may give roots, and when you're, you know, when you have something more than fruits and roots, you can do more than fruits and roots, according to what's your time and circumstance. Vishwanath comments, it's an important one, very important one for our ISKCON followers. It is understood from this sloka that teaching Vaishnava mantra with Om to persons without Upanayana is allowed. This supersedes the rules of giving such mantras only to those who have Upanayana. twice born. You know what Upanayana is? It's receiving a sacred thread. You've heard of sacred thread, right? Yes? So when a boy reaches a certain age, common, you know, 12 or 13, something like that, maybe a little younger, he gets mantras. But there's some training before that. That's Upanayana. You see, he's over his shoulder, he's wearing a thread. That's Upanayana. So what Vishwanath is saying is these Vedic mantras, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya is one of them, but there was no Upanayana. He just gave him mantra. It's authorized. It's right in the Bhagavatam. So there's the mantra being recited by Dhruva. Ours is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It doesn't require even formal diksha, when anyone can chant and become purified, because it's a different kind of mantra than the Vedic mantras that begin with Om. Notice that that's what he's saying here. He's not saying the whole thing, but Vaishnava mantras with Om, because there's many. He's not saying the whole mantra, because it's to be recited by diksha. In the purport, Prabhupada writes, one should not artificially try to see the form of the Lord while chanting Hare Krishna. But when the chanting is performed offenselessly, the Lord will automatically reveal himself to the view of the chanter. The chanter, therefore, has to concentrate on hearing the vibration, and without extra endeavor on his part, the Lord will automatically appear. Note Nama Rupa Guna Lila in that sequence. And the Nama focus goes to the hearing. And then the Lord, if he so desires, will reveal his form. So that's the message, just here, the sound. Prabhupada gives this example, classic example. When an iron rod is made red hot in a fire, it is no longer iron, it is fire. So that's the mantra, can make us purified, quality like Krishna. One should take consideration of time, place, and available convenience. Sanatan Goswami says, this is from Hari Bhakti Vilas, that as bell metal can turn to gold when mixed with mercury in a chemical process or alchemy process, so by the bona fide diksha or initiation method, anyone can become a Vaishnava. Nice image. This is Mother Jamuna taking part in a deity installation under a pandal in Jaipur. The deity was Radha Govinda. The deities that are now in New York. And there were men there, there were sannyasis and others there, but Jamuna was chosen by Prabhupada to do this deity installation. She looks very happy, worshipping the deity. One should worship the Lord by offering pure water, pure flower garlands, fruits, flowers, and vegetables, which are available in the forest, or by collecting newly grown grasses, small buds of flowers, or even the skins of trees, and if possible, by offering tulsi leaves, which are very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these are articles to be offered. He's giving, like we get in a, you know, deity worship seminar or something. There must be more elaborate than just these quick instructions, but that's what's being summarized here. It is possible to worship a form of the Lord made of physical elements, such as earth, water, pulp, wood, and metal. In the forest, one can make a form with no more than earth and water, otherwise known as mud, and worship him according to the above principles. A devotee who has full control of his self should be very sober and peaceful and must be satisfied simply with eating whatever fruits and vegetables are available in the forest. This is a 5-year-old boy. You ready for forest life? You're 7. You ready for forest life?
Yes.
Yeah? We'll see. You take your lunchbox with you that your mom prepares. But Dhruva didn't even have a lunchbox. He's just off in the forest alone. So here is a nice painting. As you can see, this is Katyayani being made of mud or earth and water, because the village girls in Braja, they didn't have wealth. They didn't have a temple. They had mud and, you know, earth and water. So they made they fashioned a deity of Katyayani and worshipped Katyayani with, as you see, garlands and flowers and incense and things. Here's another painting. That's also a deity made of earth and water or mud coming before Krishna to get their clothes. My dear Dhruva, besides worshipping the deity and chanting the mantra 3 times a day, you should meditate upon the transcendental activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His different incarnations as exhibited by the Supreme Will and personal potencies. He's a little boy. What does he know? What does a little boy know about the forms of the Lord and His activities? Well, good news is he has a very qualified mother, and his qualified mother is the daughter-in-law Swayambhuva Manu. So that family knows all about incarnations of the Lord and the Vedas and Vaishnava practices and everything. Although he's a small boy, he has already learned much of this just from his upbringing. That's the advantage of being born into a devotee family, right? You learn things that other young people don't know. One should follow the footsteps of previous devotees regarding how to worship the Supreme Lord with the prescribed paraphernalia, or one should offer worship within the heart by reciting the mantra to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is none different from the mantra. Sounds like what we do, minimally. We may also have deity worship. But if we don't have deity worship, we can worship the mantra, because the mantra is none different than the deity. You recognize the painting. This is a classic story of a brahmana without all the details because of time. But as he got old, one version says he was sitting in a class narrating Bhagavad Katha, and he heard that worship of the deity form of the Lord can be done in the mind. That's one of the possible procedures of worship. So being poor, but wishing to worship elaborately, he had this whole procedure that he routinely did of gathering articles for worship from the forest and bathing his deity in sacred waters, gathering the sacred waters, and it was Manasapuja. And then he would dress the deity and make garlands for the deity and ornaments for the deity. And then he would cook for the deity and make offerings for the deity. And all of that was Manasapuja. So the story goes, one day when he was testing the sweet rice to see if it was cool enough to offer to the Lord, he stuck his finger in the sweet rice and it burned. And his meditation broke. And as his meditation broke, you can see up here in the sky, that's a Vaikuntha Vimana descended to take him back to the spiritual world, because Lord Vishnu was very pleased by his devotion. Although he didn't physically offer all these things, he did so with great devotion within his mind. So, attentive hearing of the mantra while chanting is the same as worshipping the Lord's form, in the form of the holy name. Very important, very for us. Right within the Dhruva story is a very important lesson about our chanting process. Here's a little boy worshiping the deity, looks like a Lalmanath. Anyone who thus engages in the devotional service of the Lord, seriously and sincerely, with his mind, words, and body, and who is fixed in the activities of the prescribed devotional methods, is blessed by the Lord according to his desire. And according to his desires with a small h. That is, that the personality Godhead reciprocates with the desires of his devotees. And he appears to them or before them or reciprocates with them according to their inclinations. If a devotee desires material religiosity, academic development, sense gratification, or liberation from the material world, he is awarded these results. If one is very serious about liberation, he must stick to the process of transcendental loving service, engaging 24 hours a day in the highest stage of ecstasy, and he must certainly be aloof from all activities of sense gratification. So we're almost done. Dhruva's heard the whole thing. When Dhruva Maharaj, the son of the king, was thus advised by the great sage Narada, he circumambulated Narada, his spiritual master, and offered him respectful obeisances. Then he started from Madhavan, which is always imprinted with the lotus footprints of Lord Krishna, and which is therefore especially auspicious. Now, question. This is Satya Yuga, and Krishna doesn't appear until Dwarpa Yuga. So how the footprints of Krishna there in Mahavan? And the answer is given by Vishwanath Chakravarti. Since this pastime took place during Swayambhuva Manvantar, although he appears much later in Vaivasvata Manvantar, Krishna's prints are there because Mathura is eternal. Hari, in this verse, also refers to Krishna, since his presence is well known in Shruti. Since Krishna was the object of Dhruva's worship, being the deity of his 12-syllable mantra, Vasudevaya means Krishna, he went there from elsewhere. That's Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna. This is Jiva Goswami's commentary. And that's it for our session this evening. He's given the bhakti process. He wanted a kingdom. Narada tested his determination. I want the kingdom. I don't want to be peaceful. I don't want to let go of my hurt feelings. I know it's agitating my mind, but I want a kingdom. You kindly help me. You travel everywhere doing kind things for people. Be kind to me and give me the method to get this kingdom. So he's really determined. So appreciating the determination, he directed that determination to the bhakti process. And we have these different features. The process of meditation, the object of meditation, the mantra of meditation, the deity form of meditation, the pranayama process, the ashtanga yoga process, all to help bring the mind and everything to that particular focus. Ashtanga eventually leads to bhakti when done properly. It doesn't stop at paramatma realization. It eventually leads to bhakti, devotional service. Okay. I went quickly because I knew this section is long and we're ready for some discussion. Let's see if there's some discussion here or online. Comments or questions? Yes?
Excellent. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for this beautiful class. I was just trying to understand a few things, Maharaj. One is, initially you mentioned that Narada was testing Dhruva in the beginning, and then seeing Dhruva's determination, he advised him on the process of devotional service. Now, in our life also, we see sometimes our mentors or superiors sometimes discourage us from doing certain things. Even though they are devotional, they say that, okay, now it may not be the right time, maybe after some time when you settle down or whatever. So how do we understand if it is a test or is it an advice at that time?
Well, ask them. Very simple. They'll probably smile and tell you the truth. They'll probably say, actually, just not ready. And that it's better to go incrementally than too swiftly. But you ask them. Next.
Thank you, Maharaj. The next is about Narada's instruction about the 400 form of the Lord, Shankachakra Gada Padma. Why was he not directly mentioning about Krishna, who is generally worshipped in a 200 form?
Well, Narada is a Vaikunthavasi and Dhruva is a Vaikunthavasi. Narada is a Trikalagya personality. We heard that yesterday. So Narada knew his heart and his spirit of devotion. Okay.
But he gave the mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva.
Yes, he did.
Which is...
Now, the comment is there that means Krishna, but we also know of the forms of Vishnu. There's 24 based upon the positions of the symbols of Vishnu, and one of them is Vasudeva. He's also Vasudeva in Vaikuntha.
Yeah, because it looks like Narada was trying to mix both Vaikuntha and Goloka, because he sent to Mathura and Dhruvatil is in Vrindavan areas.
Nice try. It's a sacred place.
Yeah. And yeah, you also mentioned about Lord is already in everyone's heart.
Yes, I did.
But we cannot perceive him unless he's pleased with our devotion.
And he decides to show. There's repeated texts that say he shows when he wants to show. Mm. Yeah.
So that is only through devotion, right? Like,
well, he's attracted by devotion, and so he Paramatma can reveal himself without that same degree of devotion. Mm-hmm. But some bhakti, otherwise it won't be perceived. But there's degrees of devotion also.
So in Prahlad Maharaj's case, he was able to see Lord everywhere. Even before, he got the personal darshan of Lord Narasimhadev. So, was he...
He was a bhakta.
Maharaj?
He was a bhakta.
Okay. So, he was looking at the personal form of Lord everywhere.
I don't know what he was looking at. I don't know what he was looking at.
And last question, Maharaj.
In other words... The term Vishnu, one of the meanings of the term Vishnu is all-pervasive. And the term Vishnu generally means the Vishnu form, but means the Paramatma form. He's everywhere. Where is this God? Where is your Lord? He's everywhere. That's Vishnu. He's everywhere. Now, what Prahlad was seeing, that he's everywhere, I don't know what he was seeing, but Vishnu is everywhere. Now, Krishna, when Krishna manifests his sweetness in Vrindavan, that is spoken of he's simultaneously in a medium size, a human size, human form, and simultaneously he's all-pervasive, which is a contradiction. So, I mean, I said I don't know what Prahlad saw, but inductively, he saw the form of Vishnu. He saw, as a devotee of Vishnu sees, the Lord is everywhere. Now, exactly what did he see through knowledge, or do you actually see, you know, the form of Vishnu everywhere? That would be pretty wild, wouldn't it? So he sees through the teachings that he had been given from Narada, even when in the womb. He was seeing Vishnu is everywhere. Where is this Lord of yours? He's everywhere. So inductively, he was seeing the form of Vishnu, or seeing the presence of Vishnu everywhere. Okay?
One last thing is, this is one of the details which was mentioned in the items which can be offered to the Lord.
Mm.
There it was mentioned about grass.
Yeah.
One is in the forest. So I was kind of, can offer grass to?
Well, you offer a leaf.
Leaf.
Patram pushpam palam toyam.
I was always thinking leaves means this spinach or something like that.
Well, it can mean it's the forest leaves. Supposing there is spinach in the forest, what do you do? You offer what's there? You know, leaf from a tree, or, you know, the grass from the ground. You know, that's according to time, place, circumstance. That's the point. If you have spinach, you offer spinach. It's much nicer. And if you don't have spinach, you don't offer nothing. You offer what you have. During this past weekend, there was a 4-part parikrama around Govardhan Hill. And there, in the introduction and conclusion was a nice ashtaka by Rupa Goswami, honoring Govardhan and saying how Govardhan worships in Krishna, providing things even without Krishna asking. And one of the things that Govardhan offers, specifically in the list of things he offers, is an elephant foot yam. There's some Sanskrit term, but you know, that's just grows wild. It's available in the wild. That's what Govardhan, it wasn't a cultivation ground that agriculture people came in and grew spinach or grew pumpkins or something. It was what's naturally available. So, whatever's naturally available, according to the time, place, circumstance.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. And remember, he's just a 5-year-old boy.
Yeah.
He's not a gardener. Either of you? Yes?
Hare Krishna Guru. Yes. I think it is a 2-part question. So Ashtanga Yoga finally leads Bhakti Yoga devotion service.
Yes.
So when we
the design is one may not get that far.
Yeah. So in the Satya Yuga, the main process for the achieving perfection is meditation. When we say meditation, is same as Ashtanga Yoga.
Yes, that's correct.
So why is it? I was thinking the thing that need to be done to achieve perfection as should be devotional service, like maybe deity worship.
Yes.
But how is the Ashtanga Yoga, which is
well, it's control of the mind and senses in a way that people in the other ages don't have the capacity to do. They have the capacity to do, so they're given the procedure to do. Control of mind and senses. It, as we heard 3 times, purification of the mind and senses, because it's contaminated. So there's other means of purification, but it's preliminary to the other things, the deity worship and the mantra, and it's a lead-in. I mean, in detail, it's described in Kapila's teaching because it's Satya Yuga, same yuga. So the process of meditation is what he teaches, but before he teaches the meditation, he teaches Sankhya. So it goes from Sankhya to this is the category of spirit, meditation on spirit, engage in devotional service with purified mind and senses. So it's a arduous, intense process. It's made very easy for us in Kali Yuga because we couldn't do the other one.
So that itself is not enough, even in that yoga, right? The main process of the meditation itself is not enough. They have to perform devotional service.
Yes, but it is preliminary to it. Leads to it. It helps one become qualified for pure devotional service with a purified mind and purified senses that are under control, and you can extend them, withdraw them as required.
Maybe my second question is about, I think when we were talking about in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita in the Bhakti Shastri class, so one question came to me is that what is the understanding of the Brahmavadis, not the Mayavadis, Brahmavadis and Paramatmavadis about the personal form of the Lord?
I'm trying to recall if there's some description that I've come across that says, and I can't think of anything. You know, so again, it's intuitively or inductively. That's not their focus. They don't pay much attention to it because their focus is over here. You know, there are different sections. The Vedas are very vast, and they're focused on that section of the Vedas that brings their attention to what their interest is. Might, you know, intuitively. They're not paying attention to this other, these other features. They don't understand what we have understood. Vedanta tat tatva vidas tatvam yajnanam advayam. Brahmeti paramatmeti. So they probably don't have that conception at all. The personal form. Not on the radar screen. I'm guessing. I don't know.
They think that it's a material? I mean, because Mayavadi...
They probably don't pay much attention to it. It's not Mayavadi, it's Brahmavadi. They don't pay much attention to it. They're interested in what they're interested in. That's my sense, but I don't know of any scriptural reference that supports that.
Amara Mataji's son, Adish, has this question. How do we know about Satya Yuga? Because it was many, many years ago.
We know from scripture, so not only things that are many, many years ago, but things that are even beyond the material creation we can know through scripture. It tells us of things that our reasoning and sense perception faculties can't touch. It gives us very clear and precise information about those things.
This question is from Mahati Kirti Mataji. Was Dhruva Maharaj more sad that he could not sit on his father's lap or his stepmother's harsh words? Was his basic need, like need for belonging, was it not met, like an unmet need? So was it supposed to be met than trying to attain big kingdom, which looked very difficult to attain?
We don't know this, like, you know, what did Prahlad see? We don't know what Dhruva felt other than what's said. And what's said is, my sense of what is, from what is said, it was the insult. It wasn't so much he wanted to sit on the throne. His Kshatriya spirit was stepped on. And he was, you know, in a Kshatriya get back fight mode. Little boy, but wasn't ambition to sit on the throne. It was get back. I'll show you.
I think, I mean, she wrote something more to share. So the question also is about sometimes children feel like they have some needs, basic needs, and something like they want some better toy and stuff like that. So instead of, if we just take care of that need, would that help them to direct to Krishna or just direct to Krishna? And
you know, it just leads to more, I want a bigger toy or a better toy or more toys. You know, passion leads to more. It doesn't lead to satisfaction in Krishna.
There are two questions from Sri Radhika Mataji. The first question is it correct to understand that the seed of bhakti was received by Dhruva Maharaj from his mother, even
yes.
though he was experiencing negative emotions at the time, which goes to demonstrate that bhakti's potency can transcend material encumbrances.
Yes.
Second question, is it correct that while receiving the mercy of Narada Muni was pivotal in Dhruva Maharaj's journey, his material desires were not immediately purified at that point of contact? The purification of heart came by applying the instructions he had received in gratitude. So, when Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha is glorified, are we to understand that while some pure souls can become completely cleansed by such Lava Matra Sangha, for most, the cleansing comes from realization of the instructions through application?
Well, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha can be in the seed itself that grows over time. And in the previous statement, the seed, his mother was, in one sense, giving the seed, but she was like the Vartama Pradarshaka Guru, if you remember the image that we showed about that. She was showing the way. Now, that's a type of seed also. But she didn't give the instructions that Narada gave. She didn't give mantra also. So, both of them, we can say, seed of bhakti from both of them. But certainly she had a very important role to play. Yeah.
This question is from Radha Vallabha Prabhu. We heard about unconditional acceptance by spiritual authority.
Mm.
So is disciple unconditionally accepted by spiritual master even when the disciple is unable to practice devotional service for prolonged period of time due to deep conditioning?
Certainly. It doesn't mean, okay, I'm accepted, so I can be complacent. That's misfortune if one thinks that way. So from the disciple's side, there's continuing to strive, and from the spiritual authority side, there's acceptance. And it's not just spiritual master. Maybe there's somebody in your bhakti riksha group, or maybe something somewhere, somebody in your workplace, or something like that, that you're kind of coaching in the bhakti process. And they're, you know, not performing perfectly. So you don't reject them. Next.
This is from Rupa Vilas Prabhu. In the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, What does Vasudeva mean? One of the quadruple expansions of Baladev or Lord Krishna, who is the son of Vasudeva?
Depends on your consciousness what it means. It can mean either. That we already covered that topic. If you're a Bhagavatam follower, it probably means Lord Krishna in Krishna Loka. And so even in Vrindavan, he was sometimes called Vasudeva. Not as the son of Vasudeva. Like when Garga Muni did the name-giving ceremony. It was, you know, Krishna, it was Nanda Maharaj. And, you know, he has been born as the son of Vasudeva before. He didn't specify what that meant, but Vasudeva, so that's one of his names. Krishna in Vrindavan is Vasudeva, Krishna in Mathura is Vasudeva, Krishna in Vaikuntha is Vasudeva. Depends on the consciousness of the one calling the name.
Anjali has two questions. The first question is, when you spoke of the deity forms being made out of clay, I was thinking of Ekalavya.
Yes.
And how he crafted an earthen form of his guru to learn the art of warfare.
Yes.
It's also my understanding that you have to invite the Lord to enter the deity form to worship. So in this instance, did Ekalavya invite his guru in the form so he was able to learn, or was it the consciousness of Ekalavya as a surrendered student that empowered him to learn remotely?
Well, the Ekalavya story is a little convoluted and tricky. Drona never was requested. Ekalavya requested to be my teacher, and his answer was no. And the reason the answer was no is because he's crooked. And so what he did was crooked. He went ahead and did it anyways. Acted as if he was a student, but he was not a qualified student. And he developed some skills. But, you know, so where did those skills come from, if not from Drona? It did come from Drona. Krishna fulfills people's desires, but Drona was smart, and Drona asked for his thumb, so he couldn't. There's a very detailed discussion about this in Bhakti Sandarbha with unqualified people who develop some abilities, and they're really difficult people. Duryodhana was one of them also. So it's a long discussion, but you know, the short to be responsive. He didn't invite Drona, and Drona didn't agree to come. That is, you know, if he did, it was his own concoction. He was a bad person. Where is this? Krishna says, now let's see. It's in relation to Karna. Krishna told Arjuna to slay Karna in a way that was, you know, normally not done. And Krishna then explained why he did what he did. You know, I wanted him dead. Because he and Ekalavya and Duryodhana, they're persons that Krishna wanted to be destroyed. Because if they would continue, they would be very, very detrimental persons in the world. And Krishna came to relieve the earth from such people. So the whole that's why I said Ekalavya's story is very complex and difficult. If I can find that, I've got a lot going on. If I can find that section about Krishna's contemplation on how it was, the way in which Karna was destroyed, I'll send that to you. But if I can't find it, I'm not going to look too long. Now back to her questions.
The second question is, if I understood correctly, when you were speaking of the higher mantras being given to one, regardless of their second-born qualification, it brought to mind an old question I had, and asking out of curiosity, why are the devotees advised to wait to hear the Gayatri Mantra from the Guru?
Because the potency is through Guru, not just reading from a book. And the prior preparation for receiving Gayatri Mantra is chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra, because it doesn't have the same restrictions. But Vedic Gayatri Mantras have restrictions. They have to be qualified people to receive them from the qualified source, both.
This is Amara Mataji. Following up in Sanchari's question, my understanding is that a Brahmana is required to invite the deity into the clay form. I'm wondering how this was done by Dhruva and the gopis.
Well, they knew the procedures. He does not give the Narada does not detail, here's the procedure to do. He just says it's to be done according to procedures, the vidhis of deity worship. And the gopis, they also knew. Just like when Krishna dealt with Putana. They knew the mantras for purification. They knew all these rituals. Well, they're just village ladies. And the village girls, they also knew. They're cultured people. Qualified people. Not brahmanas, but qualified. Vedic culture was a very special time.
Sangeeta Kapoor Mataji, Prahlad Maharaj was a pure devotee from birth, but Dhruva Maharaj became a devotee because of his material desire. Is that the right understanding?
No, he didn't become a devotee because of material desire. He became a devotee because of his mother and Narada, despite his material desire.
This is from Yashoda, 10-year-old daughter of Rajeshwari Prana Mataji in Bangalore. In the Rupa Goswami or Srila Prabhupada Samadhis, will the soul still live? If yes, how will they give their mercy to the devotees?
The soul doesn't remain in the Samadhi place. The vibrational purity of that person, of the soul, is within the samadhi, but the soul is with Krishna. They give their mercy by you're calling them, you know, just like your mantra. You call your mantra, and the Lord is present, but through that sound, that's how.
This is a comment by Amrita Keli Mataji. Regarding the acceptance and progress, I tell myself I'm accepting, but looks like I'm not really accepting from the heart. I just want to progress and not really accept, as that space is uncomfortable. Thank you so much for the reflection exercise of unconditional acceptance by the spiritual master or mentors. Despite my lack or negligence, When I think of those times, I couldn't accept myself, but definitely felt very moved when I felt such love and acceptance. Thinking of those situations certainly brought my attention to deeper acceptance. Thank you so much for this practical and reflective exercises.
That's it, right? Mataji, anything? Yes.
Firstly, I beg forgiveness, Maharaj, because I was drowsing. I'm sorry for that, but the session was so encouraging, especially as Amrit Keli Mataji explained. The reflection part was really important, especially
good.
For me.
Good.
Yeah, because I think myself always, like, you know, accepted by the superiors, and I never be able to accept anybody if they do. So that is the most fallen condition of myself.
Luck.
But when you explain, it is really makes sense. Like, you know, it is very important, you know, how the acharyas are still forgiving, you know, the way I chant, the way I accept Krishna, but still, you know, I am into this, and that means the mercy of acharyas and the superior Vaishnavas are still there on fallen people like me, but I still need to improve to accept others, even to accept my son if he do something. It is really tough for me, and those mistakes I keep doing. So that is a condition. But the way when you explained, it is really clicking, Maharaj.
Okay, good.
Thank you so much.
Good. And you're accepting of them, right? Even when they get a little impatient with you.
Good night.
Okay. Prabhupada ki jai.